Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Beer and Loathing Podcast. It's our first one, sort of. It's the first one that we're going to be proud of, I'm sure.
First one I'm going to admit to.
Yeah, exactly. First one we're going to take credit for. My name is Pete M. I'm joined by Sam Sly.
What's up, everyone?
Hello.
Hello.
So, I'm from Michigan. I'm from Grand Rapids, Michigan, as you might have known if you've been to our website, which is www.beernloathing.com. Shameless plug there.
Yep, always good.
Yep. From Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Yep. Pete's in Grand Rapids, Beer City, USA. I'm in Denver, Colorado. I actually lived in Grand Rapids up until September of 2012 when I decided to pack everything I owned into a Toyota 4Runner or RAV4, whatever they still fucking make these days, and went west. So now I'm in what they call the Napa of Colorado, or Napa of something or other. Napa of beer. Napa Valley of beer. That's
there
what
we
it
go.
Is.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, I knew I had something there. So, but yeah, so Pete and I run the website, and we like to talk about all of our stupid journeys and adventures in beer.
As Sam put it one time, it's really visceral. It's not we're not experts on this shit at all. We love drinking beer. We get into some adventures sometimes. We do crazy fucking shit to get our hands on beer, and that's pretty much what this is all about.
Or sometimes just crazy fucking shit happens after we've gotten our hands on the beer. You never really know what's gonna happen.
Yeah, yeah,
which
exactly.
Is fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's a better way to put it, because I mean, we're not like jumping off fucking buildings to drink a beer or something. It's just in quest, in search for beer.
I'm not writing that off, but it hasn't happened
totally
yet.
I totally do that too. Yeah, I just haven't had the opportunity.
Yeah, and the best part is Pete and I. We've always tried to be the guys that just are hanging out drinking beer no matter what it is. I've been a lifelong PBR and Stroh's drinker. Pete loves Black Label.
Drink the shit out of Black Label.
And there's never a time in a day where I probably won't say I won't drink a PBR. But at the same time, we both love good craft beer too, and it's...
I think we have a decent palate. Like, I think we can taste beer and we know when it's good or know when it's shitty, you know? We know what we're drinking. We know what to look for when we're drinking it.
Exactly. So we just like to have fun, and we're going to hopefully have some fun with this podcast and make fun of some shit, talk about some shit, and...
take shits.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how it goes.
So just, I guess, to start it off, what are you drinking?
I am actually drinking a Michigan beer, a Double Crooked Tree IPA from Dark Horse Brewing Company.
Oh, that's so good.
It is fucking fantastic. It's not my first go-about with this beer. I actually have a real soft spot in my heart for Dark Horse because their beer's delicious, and their brewery is just cool as hell. I haven't been in a couple of years, but it's just small. They have really great pizza, and just the atmosphere. It's down in Marshall, Michigan, and like it seems like
a total biker bar too. There's just like bike parts all over the place, and
I don't know if there's still decoration. Is there still a tattoo parlor across the parking lot from it?
The last time that I was there, there's a shop, there's like a store there, like a merch place for the brewery, yeah, and that was closed, so I didn't really get to go inside and check around.
I don't know if the tattoo parlor is still there anymore. They might have had to change things around, but I just remember the first time I went there about 4 or 5 years ago, there's just a tattoo parlor, it was open, and we're like, oh, let's just drink some craft beer, get hammered and go get tattoos, why not? And we ended up not
what
doing
could
it,
go
but
wrong?
Yeah, I know. Thank God
I would
we
love
didn't,
to do
but
that.
I would probably do it too one of these days. But so, anyways, that's what I'm having. Little taste of home. I'm really enjoying it. What about you, Pete?
Guess. Black Label.
All right.
Yep.
I went fancy for the first podcast, and you just went classy.
I have the Lips of Faith series in the fridge. The sour one, the La Folie, or however you say it.
I'm not entirely sure how you pronounce that.
Yeah, I'm just guessing. I'm not French, but it's awesome. It's really good. I've had it before, and I had to pick up another bottle.
Yeah, man.
I'll be cracking that at some point tonight.
Attaboy. You do that.
Yeah.
That's funny. See, you're drinking a beer from my neck of the woods. I'm drinking a beer from your neck of the woods.
Yeah, that's awesome how that works out.
I know.
Well, I
know.
I will be drinking a beer. Right now it's from fucking PBR, wherever they make that, Milwaukee, I think. Right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's contract brewed in a Miller facility.
Yeah.
It's my best guess, but hey, it is what it is. And actually, that fact you told me earlier today that Black Label is just huge in South Africa blew my mind.
Isn't that weird? Yeah, I did not know that at all. It's like the most award-winning beer in South Africa. Like, how the fuck does that work?
Dude, if I were them, I would be promoting the shit out of that in America.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because why the fuck not? I mean, PBR's still holding on to the fact that they're America's favorite beer in 1893. This seems to have more legitimacy than that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's a little outdated, PBR.
It is, but you know what? I still love it for it. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I just thought it was funny that it was the exact same beer, too, because when you were describing it, I thought maybe that either there was a different brewery down in South Africa that made it, or they made, like, a special recipe for South Africa.
See, I'd seen it was Carling's Black Label, so I knew that it was obviously the same beer, but the second thing that you're thinking of, where they made a new recipe for it, that's what I thought they did in South Africa, but come to find out, it's just the exact same shit. But they serve it, but they just love it down there and serve it on draft, and I don't know if they love it necessarily, but it's won a ton of awards, and it's pretty fucking available wherever you go.
Tell me you're not jealous, though, because I haven't seen that stuff on draft. I haven't seen it in anything other than a can.
No.
Since I even learned about it, whatever it was, 3-4 years ago, which I don't know when it officially came back from the dead, because I'm pretty sure that was one of those dead brands that kind of didn't exist for a while.
Yeah, there's like a revival, like Schlitz came out with their new thing, and
their new old thing.
Yeah, their new recipe, old recipe from the 60s that didn't taste like shit. My friend, actually, I used to work with, used to drink it in, I think, the 80s. They're like, yeah, we called it the whiskey. We called it the whiskey of beer because it tasted like shit.
They probably made the whiskey face every time they took a sip.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fucking terrible.
Yeah. But as soon as I saw that was $3.99 a six-pack, Black Label. Black Label was in my fridge from there on out.
Amen, man, amen. I mean, I just remember going down to the Meanwhile in GR and getting 75-cent cans on Tuesdays.
Oh, yeah. I still do that.
I hope so.
Maybe I'll do that tomorrow.
It sounds like a nice little Tuesday.
How'd you get your hands on a double Crooked Tree?
It was in a beer trade. Thank God for beer trades, because I know Dark Horse, I don't know if they make it out of Michigan or not, but their distribution is not huge.
No.
And if it weren't for beer trades, I would probably be not drinking a lot of the beers that I do try here and there. And actually, it's a beer trade from our guest that we'll be talking to momentarily. But
Yeah.
It's, and I don't know. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, and if it weren't for beer trades, I mean, there's a lot of beers that we wouldn't be able to try.
Yeah, and you know, it's regional. You know, I'm pretty sure anyone that's listening is probably nodding their head going, yeah, fucking beer fucking distribution sucks. And it's a mystery to me, kind of. Like, I understand the fact that it's this three-tiered system that was established after Prohibition was repealed. And basically the federal government said, to as much as I can tell, fuck it, you guys deal with it on your own. It's going to be a state thing. And
don't really know, like, too much about it. But from what I've read, it sounds like there was a ton of corruption before Prohibition, with the brewers being able to, like, have basically a ton of, you know, because it would just be from the brewer to a bar.
Exactly.
And then the person who ran that bar didn't have to have much. The brewery would just supply all of it, and there was just a fuckload of bars everywhere, which sounds sweet, but I guess there was corruption in there somewhere, and I'm not too sure on that, but
no, that's about right. That was originally was meant to get rid of the corruption that there was because of the way that the big brewers were able to supply the breweries or the local pubs, as I think is what it was. But again, I'm no expert. I've dabbled in it, and I've watched a lot of people on the internet argue about it, and they'll probably email me and be like, "Hey, dude, you're a fucking idiot. This is how it works." And you know what? I don't give a shit. I care enough to know that it's three tiers now, and it's state regulated, and it's different for each state. Because in Michigan, I used to love going to the grocery store and going grocery shopping, because you know why? I could go buy my meat, my vegetables, my Doritos, and then pick up a 12-pack of really good craft beer.
Yeah, that's solid. That's definitely a good. That's.
I moved to Colorado, and if you buy anything in the grocery store in Colorado, you're getting 3-2 beer. Which, if you know that's what you're getting, that's not a big deal. If you aren't expecting that, it can kind of piss you off when you're like a 6-pack deep and thinking, huh. This isn't doing what I thought it was going to do right now.
Wait, what is that? What?
So in Colorado, the way the liquor laws go out here, which is another thing I've only barely dabbled in, is...
Are you saying 3.2% alcohol?
Yes. Any beer you buy in a grocery store is 3.2% alcohol by weight instead of volume. So it roughly translates to about 4% ABV.
What? I did not know that.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Oh, yeah.
No, I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you buy any beer in a grocery store, the strongest it's going to get is 4% ABV. And roughly, that's by my dad's math, actually, so take that how you will. So if you want to get real beer, like full-strength beer, you have to go to a liquor store or a beer store. And it's not like there's not any of them around. I mean, there's three of them within a mile or two of me, so I don't have any problem getting beer. Yeah, but it's just like, now I just can't do it all in one shot, because there's a couple of good grocery stores in Michigan where you could get some really good beer.
Meijer being one of them.
Meijer is definitely one of them. I bought a lot of beer at Meijer, that's a fact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have, like, huge refrigerated cooler sections filled
whole
with beer.
Whole fucking aisles, man.
Yeah, dude. Filled with beer from all over the place. It's fantastic. All right, well, our guest today, since we're talking about this already, I mean, he's a general manager of a beer bar here in Grand Rapids that I used to work at, actually. I used to bar back there. And he probably has some insight into distribution, since I'm sure he has to deal with all the fucking red tape that surrounds it.
And he's also an avid trader on Instagram. I know that because he's a big fan of this, getting beers outside of his market, like, you know.
Yeah.
Since he understands a distribution model. But yeah, the bar, he's a great bar, actually. It's Vitali's in Grand Rapids. I like that place. I frequented that a lot when I lived there. So.
Yep, and he knows a ton of beer reps from around the area. And sometimes... Yeah, he gets some good beer in there. Actually, all the time he gets good beer in there. I don't think there's ever really any shitty beer. He has 32 taps, I think, 31 or 32 taps, and about 27 of them are good craft beer from the area.
He's passionate about putting good beer in the hands of the consumer, and that makes him all right in my book.
Fucking A. Well said. Well, we've never done this before, obviously, but... Oh, go for
it. Don't forget that last fact. I also heard that he also was paid $5 to bend over and touch his toes in front of his neighbor. So.
Oh, yeah. And he didn't even take the money.
Weird. Yeah. Let's get him on the line.
Yeah, definitely. I'll give him a call.
All right.
Hi.
Hey, Michael Biddick.
Hey, thanks for the phone call.
No problem. It's our pleasure. We didn't just take a fucking half hour to figure out how to call you at all, so that went really smooth.
Let's welcome him to the show, everyone. That's as jock-rock as I'm going to get, I swear.
Just seconds ago, we were talking about beer distribution. I swear to God it wasn't 30 to 45 minutes ago.
You know, when you talk distribution, it feels like it's, you know, 30, 45 minutes ago, but it really just goes by that quick.
Yep. So basically, we were just talking about beer trading, how you're into beer trading, and just like the type of beers that we've gotten. Because I'm drinking a beer from Denver. Well, I will be drinking a beer from Denver, and Sam's drinking a beer from Marshall. He's drinking Double Crooked Tree. So
it's one you actually sent me, my friend. Nice. So I thought it was appropriate. Since you're going to be the guest, I would enjoy one of these beers.
Honor awesome. By drinking a beer you sent.
I'm glad you have beer left that I sent you.
I'm surprised, man. I went through those two from New Belgium way too quick for my own good. I ended up sleeping on the porch for a while on Saturday.
What was it, 11%, 9%?
Something like that, yeah.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Add a little sun to it. And...
yeah. Good deal. Yeah, my shoulders are wicked sunburned. It's good. It was a good day.
Nice.
So, I mean, I guess I've never even talked to you about, like, beer distribution, like, how that works, like, how you find... I mean, do you just, like, hire... How the fuck does that even work? Do you hire somebody, or, like B&B and Old Ken or whatever those places, you know?
Well, to break it down to the simplest form,
yeah, explain,
it's a three-tier system.
Explain it to me like I'm five.
Lowest common denominator here, buddy.
Three-tier system. Post-prohibition was started. So you have your beer makers, or Bell's, or Founders, or Avery, or whatever. They have to sell to a middleman, which is a distributor. And then the distributor sells to essentially the retailer, who sends sales to the end user, which is us. Bumbling idiots drinking beer.
Yeah, aren't we all?
Yep. So,
bless all of our hearts.
But the main thing is that for a three-tier system is that no one tier can have their hands on another tier.
So they have to be completely just separate from one another.
Yep. So you can't be a distributor and a retailer. So I can't own a distributorship and own a bar.
Okay.
So as far as how the beer gets to the distributors, you know, from what I know is that the, say, like, just recently, New Belgium came to Michigan. Well, they court pretty much a bunch of the different distributors. I mean, in Michigan, there's a lot more distributors than I think there are in some states. And they court all these different distributors to cover the whole state of Michigan, or as many counties as they want to cover, I guess. But I would assume they want to cover the whole state. And they go with the distributors they feel more comfortable with. And they say, okay, you get beer. And then they negotiate what beers are going to get or what's available to them. Sometimes I know New Belgium has a pretty strict rollout, and here's what you get first, and then they'll start rolling out more and more and more. And packaging wise, they start only with 22 ounces is all New Belgium started with, and then they release kegs, and then they release 12 ounces. So.
Was that similar with, like, when Oscar Blues hit Michigan? Because that was a pretty recent one, too.
Yep. And I don't know if they had restrictions. I think they kind of got, here's what's available now, and you get it all.
So well, you have cool. to, like, kind of introduce yourself into the market before you start doing, like, kegs and stuff? Like, is that what
just,
you were saying?
No, that's just New Belgium takes a tactic that way. They slowly roll out things, like, 1 month at a time. And they start with 22-ounce bombers first. I mean, they didn't even sell 12-ounce bottles at first. Yeah. It was just straight bombers.
Mm-hmm. There's even a joke in Denver about how if New Belgium releases a beer in August, we'll see it in Denver by about October or November. It's just they do a very meticulous rollout, it sounds like, for just about anything they do.
Yeah, weird. And then there's other beer companies that like just recently came to Michigan, which is Clown Shoes, and they went with one distributor that covers the whole state. Because it's very rare, some distributors will cover the whole state, but
where'd that come from? I mean, I wanted to get a bomber of it tonight because I've heard a lot of people talking really good about it, but I didn't find it tonight.
Went to Martha's. It's good. It's contract brewed. It's out of Massachusetts.
I was gonna say New York, but that sounds writer.
I think
writer.
But yeah, they gave them anything and everything they could possibly handle. They flooded the market with everything. So they didn't roll out just a couple things or their mainline stuff. They rolled out their big bottles and their big hitters and their little guys and everything. So
oh, that's cool.
So like in your role at the bar at Vitali's, I mean, do you talk with, because I've heard you mention like beer reps before. Do you talk like to the beer reps and distributors? Like, are you kind of almost like a weird middleman? In itself, because it seems like beer reps would want to be talking to you, who's going to be, you know, pulling their beer on the shelves, and then obviously then you got to talk to the distributor because they're going to be the one that's actually supplying it.
Oh yeah, well, how it works, though, the distributors actually have beer reps, or they're reps for the distributorship, which they represent of the beers they carry in the portfolio.
Oh, okay.
And then there's also, I mean, there's national reps for the brewery, or they have local people, or depending on the market, they may have two people. But usually, like in Michigan, I think a lot of the beer distributor or the beer makers or breweries or whatever, they usually have one or two people in Michigan, sometimes just one that covers the whole state, or someone covers the East Coast, someone covers the West Coast.
So is it just like some, not to interrupt you, but is it just like some dude, like let's say Founders wants to get out to the East Coast, they want to go to New York, would it just be some guy from a beer distribution company that's out in New York representing
Founders
for a specific area?
Founders will hire somebody to cover that territory, and that person will oversee. They actually work with the distributors to make sure that they're reaching their goals and helping promote it. But then also the distributors have their own reps who obviously, but they represent not only Founders, but say if they house, I don't know, you know, something like Southern Tier, or they represent Dogfish Head too. So they're selling Founders, Dogfish Head, Budweiser, Bud Light. They sell all of it.
Okay, so it's not just one person assigned to one brewery. I mean, he can take on many responsibilities.
Not from the distributor end. From the brewery end, though, their brewery reps are, they just want you buying Founders. That's all they care about. They generally don't give a shit about anything else.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's the gist of it. And there's always fun stories out there about distribution and three-tier system that I've heard before. And I mean,
we're saying fuck all that and shipping our beer via FedEx to each other.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a matter of getting around distributions from state to state that don't exist.
But have you guys been seeing that shit about the United States Postal Service thinking about lifting that 100-plus-year ban on sending alcohol in the mail?
No, I knew they did it on wine just because...
Well, there's fights, too, about the three-tier system in wine and how the wine guys are getting around
exactly,
it.
Exactly, yeah. How they can send out, because there's such like a little demand for it or something I was reading about, and it's so expensive to ship the wine in general, they're just like, fuck it, we don't care.
Apparently, the Postal Service is considering lifting the ban on alcohol, because apparently that was made in like 1909.
Yeah.
And
technology's gotten a little
because they're, you know, fucking broke, and they're going to like go bankrupt by October if things keep going the way they are or something.
If they
read this today.
If they lift that ban, I'm sure they will see a significant increase of people just openly shipping beer.
But would you trust the post office with your beer? How many letters have you gotten?
I don't trust anybody with my beer. I wouldn't trust FedEx or UPS, but those are the only... I ship it that way just because I don't want to have a fucking FBI agent kicking me in the nuts when he finds out that I have
allegedly ship through UPS and FedEx. None of us actually physically, that. That's illegal and inappropriate. So
hypotheticals.
And on another note, I don't think the FBI is going to kick you nuts. I think it's going to be the ATF.
The DEA, I don't know, one of those fucking...
The
NSA.
Three fucking letters are
going to
walk
right
in and just kick Pete in the balls.
Yeah.
The cool story about distribution, which is kind of interesting about I don't know, you can, like you said, you read snippets on Wikipedia, but this is actually close to home for Bell's and how they pulled out of Illinois completely, because the whole three-tier system was, prohibition started because breweries were, they owned bars and they could only sell their beer in that bar, and they were, corrupting the system, and there was no regulation and taxes, and
that's the piece we were trying to put together.
Yeah, that's where the corruption comes in, I guess.
Back then it was, so Stroh's had a brewery, well then they would open these bars and they would tell these bar people, hey, you carry our beer only and we'll supply you with, all the beer you can handle, we will buy you coolers, we will help you get loans to buy your bar, you just pay us back, but you have to serve this beer and only these beers.
They got their dick deep in their asses.
Oh, yeah. So that's how that... And it was just corrupt, and you know, it was getting bad or worse or whatever, and it was that's what led to Prohibition. The government couldn't regulate half of it, and they weren't getting their taxes that they wanted, and so they said, all right, 18th Amendment, here you go.
That is new to me. I seriously didn't know that that's what the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yep, and then they did the 21st Amendment, which pretty much created the three tiers to separate those three, so you couldn't do that. You couldn't have your, you know, your
so the government did create the three tiers, but at that point, that's when they said, all right, your regulation, that's like your state duty. You guys go fucking figure that out.
I think the three-tier system was basically to, A, collect taxes, and B, to create equality.
Beer is such a fucking staple in American society that we've amended our constitution so that...
That says a lot right there.
Yeah, twice, dude. We did it twice.
Twice. If we're not a nation of alcoholics now, I don't know, you know, what we have in.
But the corruption still exists, just like I say in Bell's Paletta, Illinois, because they couldn't get their beer on the shelves. Yeah. Because there's hardly, if you go to Chicago, there's not a lot of, for as many people in Chicago, how many craft breweries are in Chicago?
Not many.
I was going to say, there's not a ton, but.
No, there's very few, and then I think there's two stories that I know of are Bell's Paletta, Illinois, because the distributor that Bell's got stuck with or went with didn't give two shits about Bell's beer.
Yeah.
And they weren't pushing it, so they couldn't get on the shelves, so. And they were, I guess there was a law where you couldn't switch distributors for X amount of time, and I think one of the distributors got bought out by a bigger distributor.
Nope, you're exactly right. This is actually one of the few distributor like stories I researched, because I brought it up in one of my blog posts.
Yeah.
And basically everything you said up to that point is true, and that's when they created their second brand for Kalamazoo beer. Yeah. And basically since, you know, they created a new brand, so they didn't switch distributors. They got a new one.
Yep.
Just told, you know, basically told the man, fuck you, we're going to sell our beer this way.
Yeah, and they just pulled out completely out of Illinois to say, suck it. And then I think the other story that I heard recently was there's a brewery called Two Brothers.
That's an Illinois brewery. I recognize that name.
Two Brothers, yeah. They, because like I said, Chicago market was dominated by these big distributors that, you know, I mean, they were giving freebies away, and, you know, they were installing tap lines for these bars if they carried these specific beers, and which is prohibition or pre-prohibition, you know, that's naughtiness.
Right, exactly.
And,
no,
but to
no
get,
boys, you can't do that.
To get around it, this Two Brothers, Two Hands, or not, it's not Two Hands. Anyways, they split up. The brothers split. One brother took the brewery, and another brother created a Windy City Distributing or Chai, something like that, distributing.
Yeah.
So they could get their beer into the market.
I'm pretty sure who you're talking about is the one brother that split off from the brewery that started another brewery. I think he joined up with this dude I follow on Twitter, and I think it's Off Color Brewing is what they made.
Yeah, all I know is that it was two brothers, and they split from one kept the brewery, and the other one opened a distributorship, so you could distribute the brothers' beer, and that's how they got around the big distributors, and it took them a while to get started, but they successfully are.
That's fucked up that it's that easy to do that, then, because then, I mean, like, breweries like Anheuser-Busch, I'm sure, buy out distributors, or at least have a hand pretty deep in their pockets to get where they need to be, you know? Because, I mean, every time you go in somewhere, it's like Budweiser right at eye level.
When there's 75% of their, like, revenue, yeah, you know, they're going to have a little bit of say in what goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then there's, like, Pete, you know, there's Westside Beer Distributing, which is mainly Anheuser-Busch.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That was another thing that was, you know, a little... around or a way around, you know, the three-tier system, they would say, okay, we will give, if you sell this much amount of, you know, if you put this much effort into our Anheuser-Busch products, then there's bonuses for these distributors.
Yeah.
So, but now I think it's relaxing. Anheuser-Busch had to relax a little because of the whole craft beer scene that there's just, you know, these Anheuser-Busch houses were like, well, we're getting left behind. We need, you know, smaller breweries because, you know, the craft beer revolution is taking over. I think Anheuser-Busch had to step back a little bit on their whole, you know, Anheuser-Busch house or Miller house or whatever they were.
Yeah, I mean, so that sounds like just straight up spiffs for sales and stuff, which, you know, it's not illegal, but it's just...
It's a way around the three-tier system to a certain
exactly.
degree.
Well, and then all of a sudden, AB buys, you know, Goose Island. Yeah. And, you know, they start trying to sell the shit out of Shock Top and all the different variations of Shock Top.
Yeah, disgusting.
I like to call it Shocker Top. It's gross, man.
Yeah, not good beer. But, so I don't know. Distribution, there's lots of, I mean, there's lots more, I guess.
It's amazing to me that there can be so many ins and outs with something that was supposed to essentially, I mean, granted, I'm pretty sure the government's big goal was to get their taxes, like you said, but yeah. I think they were supposed to try to simplify it, and, you know, in 21 when Prohibition was repealed, I mean, it probably was simple and it was probably great, and then all of a sudden, you know, I like to draw it back to, like, advertising. You start getting these guys, like Anheuser-Busch, that were just aggressively advertising. Because, you know, before Prohibition, Pabst was one of the biggest breweries in the country.
1933, by the way, is when Prohibition ended.
Was it? I was way off.
In 1920 and 1933.
13 years, I know that much.
Either way. Yeah, but the long story short, it's, I don't know, the marketing push became crazy, and, like, I feel like a lot of these breweries have been just banking on their marketing pushes and their advertising pushes for so long, and, like, craft beer has been the first cog in the wheel in that. They don't have to advertise that much because the products and the people that, like, advocate it speak for it in that sense. So, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see where this goes in the next, like, 10, 15 years, because apparently we are finally at more breweries in the country than we were pre-Prohibition. We're, like, 2,538 or something. And when Prohibition kicked in, we were just over 2,000 or something, and something like that. So,
Yeah, then I know there's, we'd have to actually do some research to talk intelligently about this.
No, we don't do that.
Yeah, we never
there,
do that.
I know that there, the whole three-tier system violates, I think, the, like, international trade something.
Oh, the NAFTA or something?
I don't know if it's NAFTA, but it's, so they might have to, like, the three-tier system may get broken down or redone here someday soon.
No, that's going to be
reading about that
no matter what.
That's going to be another Beer and Loathing podcast, dude. That's going to be an article we're going
to
write about.
I'm trying to look it up right now.
That's what I'm looking at it as.
Fucking job security.
Booyah! Yeah.
Federal Trade Commission, yeah, the FTC. So they may have to look different routes of that. I don't know what's it. I don't know where it is, but it's, I just know it's an international thing, because in Belgium, I think it's just straight from a lot of the foreign countries, straight from producer to end user. There's
yeah,
no middleman.
I know even less about Europe than I know about America. I mean, I love Europe because most of us here are from Europe originally, but it's, I don't know. I just don't understand how it works.
Yeah.
It doesn't lend
either.
Itself that much to corruption, apparently, if it's still been around, because, I mean, the main reason that Prohibition went into effect anyway is the corruption that from
or
a gigantic
people,
fucking business.
Or at least the corruption in Europe was benefiting the government, so, like, well, we'll just let it run how it is, so it doesn't really fucking matter to me.
Yeah, that's totally
okay,
true.
Okay, it's the General Agreement of Trade and Services. I just found something from the World Trade Organization.
WTO, mate!
Yeah. I guess Budweiser dominates the world's sales because it's easier to penetrate foreign markets because there's not so many restrictions on the three-tier system.
Hmm. Well, I have heard, I have met actually guys from England that they came over and like, oh, I can't wait to drink some Budweiser for cheap because they'd like to drink it in fucking England, but it's, you know, like a premium beer over there because it's an import.
It's got to be like how Beck's is here, because I love drinking Beck's, but I never want to buy it because it's like $9 a six-pack. I'm like, this is just a generic fucking beer. Why would I pay this much for it?
At least it's not like Foster's. I loved Foster's for a number of years, and I actually met a... I had a hat that I'd wear all the time, a Foster's hat. And I met a couple of people from Australia, and they're like, why are you wearing that hat? I'm like, well, I like Foster's, man. That's a great beer. You guys gotta love that down in Australia. I'm like,
it's
that is
piss.
The shittiest beer yeah, we have here. Beer.
I knew that girl. You're talking about Travis's wife, aren't you?
Yeah, and then there's a couple other people that no, not Travis's wife. She was American. He married my friend. But
Maddie, whoever Maddie was then.
Yeah, she lived with Brandon and those guys.
Yeah,
but,
that's important for the conversation.
It is very.
I told you it's like fly on the wall. I don't fucking care if people don't know Maddie or not.
Anyways, here's what it is. So, the international producers are challenging the three-tier system, and the EU has requested the United States conform to its distribution system with requirements of the General Agreement of Trade and Services.
Well, does the EU remember what happened last time they asked us to reform to something of theirs?
And there's
Boston Tea Party, motherfucker.
Yeah. And they're saying American laws are not liberal. If the Americans aren't liberalized, they may be able to force or possibly dismantle the distribution. Our three-tier system via the World Trade Organization by treaty. So there goes. We're going to throw beer in the harbor now.
Because yeah. muscling America and anything has worked so great in the past.
Yeah.
We were so there's some, back
I look more into it.
I hope they can take a diplomatic way to that because from what I've been reading on the internet, like a lot of breweries have been doing well, like exporting a lot of beer overseas to like Europe and stuff. So it's like yeah, I feel like it's in their best interest to like figure something out.
How does beer distribution work in Canada?
Dude, I don't know.
Do you live in Canada?
I'm just saying, like, is there Founders up in Canada? I mean, is there any Michigan
no.
beer in Canada?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is Founders in Canada?
I'm sure there's some. Well, there's my buddy lives in Brazil, and...
Because we don't... the only reason I say that, I'm sorry for interrupting, the only reason I say that is because I don't really see a lot of craft Canadian beers. And
there's
gotta
not
be.
Many.
There's gotta there's be craft breweries up there, and I just never
yeah,
see them
few.
In America.
Well, what's it? Unibrew's Canadian.
You know, I feel like there are. I mean, I don't know if their definition of craft is the same as our definition of craft. There's a dude I follow on Instagram who puts up a lot of cool beers that I am pretty sure are mostly Canadian. Like, I tried to trade with him once, and the amount of money it was going to cost to ship to Canada was retarded.
What's his name?
Oh, I don't know, man.
There's a ton of microbreweries in Toronto.
But the thing is, I don't know what their distribution model is up there, but Pete, you remember when we went up there for your birthdays, however many years ago that was, we always had to make a stop to the beer store.
Boris Bold, motherfucker.
And Stiegel, whatever the shit that was.
Yeah, that was really, really bad.
Back in 2010, I remember seeing PBR Light, and I flipped out, and the guy at the beer store was like, "You're clearly from America." I'm like, "Yeah, I am. PBR, motherfucker." Bam! Bought three cases of PBR Light because I could.
Nice.
Did you smuggle that back into America, or did you...
Shit, no, I drank it all up there in Canada. Right there.
That night.
Right there on their ski hill.
Oh, that's funny. And Pete, you know how you got screwed in Pennsylvania? You had to go to the distributor or whatever?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that a little bit, because that fucking sucked your dick.
I guess it's... Pennsylvania and Utah are the same.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did I tell you about that, Sam?
What? No, you didn't tell me about that. I didn't realize Pennsylvania was full of Mormons.
Basically, yes. When I went down to Pennsylvania, they had Voodoo Brewery. I went to Meadville. So they had Voodoo Brewery, and that was really good. And Rebecca and I were like...
I can't believe you didn't bring any home.
Let's get...
Yeah, dick.
They didn't... Okay, they had bottles, but I had very little money on the trip out there. I was pretty poor.
Dude, stop being so poor.
So, I'm
why'd
trying.
You charge
I'm,
the company, man?
I'm fucking
expense
working
that shit.
On it. Yeah, right. So we went out there, and then we were going to get just beer to drink at our hotel. Like, you know, just go to the beer store and buy a six-pack of good beer, maybe a mix-and-match pack. No, you go into, like, these drive-through distribution things. It's like the distributor has a retail store that they sell these beers in, and it was all macro.
But that seems like illegal based on what Michael told us.
Yeah, and I...
One and the other.
I don't know how that works. They called it something distribution, but I doubt it was actually like a distribution. I'm sure it was just like a retail store that was set up weird or something. I don't know how it works, but it was all macro brew. Could not find any micro in the entire city of Meadville. I even talked to some of the locals, and I'm like, is there any place I can just get like a six-pack of beer from Pennsylvania? And they're like, in Meadville? Yeah. No. No, you can't do that. Fuck you. No. So the closest place that you could go is a place in Erie, but... we went up there the next day, and we drove by it, and it was closed. So I don't know how like they got around it, or maybe it was...
Utah and Pennsylvania are alcoholic beverage control states, and they maintain a monopoly on their distribution tier. And then Michigan is actually what the hell is it called? Michigan's monopolize the liquor.
Oh,
Michigan's a liquor control state where the state of Michigan, if Bacardi wants to sell liquor to Michigan, they got to go sell to the state. Then the state regulates who gets, they hand select these distributors to sell it or to ship it for them. But everything goes to the state. State sets the prices. State sets the minimum shelf prices for off-premise retails, which are like convenience stores or beer stores, liquor stores, whatever.
That's another thing about Pennsylvania is you can't buy liquor where you buy beer, and you can't buy wine where you buy beer. Liquor and wine are sold.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, liquor and wine are sold in special stores. Yeah.
All I know about Utah is they shame you for drinking any sort of booze at all, especially in Salt Lake, based on some friends of mine that went there. They look at you like you're ordering liquor, you goddamn sinner.
I would be fucking Satan himself if I went to that city then.
I'm pretty sure we'd burst into flames upon walking into any establishment in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, so to find your details on your trip to Pennsylvania, you're gonna look up alcohol beverage control state or something and research that, Pete.
I'm gonna have to look into that.
So yeah.
That's some interesting shit, man. I didn't realize Pennsylvania was that crazy about it. At least, I don't know if that's just only in certain cities, like you said, in Meadsville or whatever.
And they got some kick-ass breweries and some new breweries that are popping up that are kick-ass.
Oh, really?
We went to Meadville. Well, in Meadville, we went to Voodoo, and that was pretty damn good. Really cool place. Voodoo's supposed
to have, they do some, apparently stuff some kick-ass Pappy beers or... with, yeah, Pappy Barrels.
So basically, yeah, we were in Meadville. There is Voodoo, and that was pretty cool. And then the next day we went up to Erie, and the only place that had an actual brew pub was this place called Union Brewery on Union Square, and it was like an old train station. No, Union Station. It was an old train station. Super cool, like all marble everywhere. They had a decent selection of beer, too, but only brew pub.
Yeah.
That's cool. I think actually brew pubs are going to be the future of breweries. In terms of, I mean, unless you have a fantastic, amazing, it explodes your dick with joy beer, it's going to be hard to get into the game in a national ring. And the more places are buying it, I feel like ingredients are going to eventually get more affordable for small breweries to do small batches, and that's where it's going to come down to. It's going to get almost like it was back, pre-prohibition and stuff, where you're gonna like walk down the street to your local brew pub and like, I'll have a pint of your ale.
Except that it won't be controlled by a larger brewery. It will be.
Well, exactly.
That's
what I mean. It'll be that. I guess it'll be pre all the bullshit that went on with prohibition. It'll be like your Grand Rapids or whatever. The fucking Belding Brewery is making their beer, and they're and that's where you get it.
Like
you can take a growler to go.
That'd be
or
fantastic.
Something. I just, that's the only way I can see the market continuing to expand, because otherwise it's just going to get saturated.
Yeah, I think in the next 2 to 3 years we'll see the peak, and then you're going to start to see a lot of fallout in the next 5 years.
Yeah.
Little guys are going to fail. I think we're getting close to the peak of the boom.
Yeah, and I think the problem is a lot of these guys are going to get bought up by big breweries. That's where I think
I hope does not happen, is like the smaller ones, because you were saying that's the future of beer drinking is going to brew pubs, like small brew pubs, like hometown. If that were to happen, I bet bigger breweries would move in and buy them out in a heartbeat.
No one's going to buy them unless they're producing some good shit.
Right. Yeah, and I don't think they're going to buy them to just leave them in their own market. If they're going to buy something, they're going to buy it to produce it and sell it, like, countrywide. I'm just saying, for the craft beer movement as we know it, like, the next logical step is going to be just small local brew pubs like that. But that's me. I don't know shit about shit.
Yeah. Neither do I. I just found out that Pappy Van Winkle makes bourbon.
Oh.
and they make some of the best bourbon in the world because they use, or they make small amounts and they use, or they age it longer than most bourbons.
Well, I'm a bourbon fan.
So you know, I can't believe you don't know anything about Pepe Van Winkle.
I know. I just drink bourbon. I can't say I'm a connoisseur.
That name is so ridiculous. It just makes me think of an old man playing with his dick. It's all like, "Hey, Mr. Pepe Van Winkle, let's go have some fun." That's all I can. That's all I hear.
Well, it comes from the old Rip Van Winkle distillery.
Shut up.
Yeah.
I like Buffalo Trace and mid-range bourbons.
Well, this is part of Buffalo Trace, actually.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
You know, little do I know.
If you guys ever come out to Colorado, Stranahan's whiskey, I don't think they make bourbon, but they make a fucking wicked whiskey out here, and the distillery does tours on a regular basis. So I would break my no whiskey vow to go take that tour.
I will think I'm drinking beer while you drink whiskey.
I'll do
both. I'll do that too. That's more my style anyway.
I don't do whiskey.
I don't do whiskey, but I'll drink it.
False.
Negative.
Pete's whiskey dick's the opposite of the normal whiskey dick.
Yeah, when you say whiskey dick, huge boner. My dick turns into the Hulk, dude.
Green and purple pulsating.
Yeah, it's just really gross looking, all muscular.
I hear those little ones are easier to fill.
What?
Wait, what?
The blood flow is less, or less of a blood flow is required to fill such a little guy.
If you have to explain your joke, it's not a good joke.
I know.
No one's saying Pete doesn't almost pass out every time he gets an erection. I mean, that's just...
It takes most of the blood in my body to power my boner.
Just a side effect of
I don't have a lot of blood.
From God.
Jesus. Well, guys.
Shit, that was good stuff, man. Mike,
yeah.
Thanks for
joining
out.
Us, dude.
All right, Pete, should we do our stupid fucking promotional bullshit at the end and...
Yep, then we're
call
done.
This good.
Who are you all sponsored by?
Us. Ourselves right now.
Oh.
Unless Vitalis wants to do something about that.
Yeah, they suck.
Fair enough. But anyways. Well, you can follow us on our website at beerandloathing.com, as Pete said earlier, beerandloathing.com, and also find us on
and loathing or beer and
we described
loathing.
It earlier as beer, letter
beer, the
N,
letter N,
loathing.
There you go.
Beer
so
and
Facebook,
loathing was already taken.
So on Facebook, it's facebook.com/beer-letter-n-loathing and Twitter @ beer-letter-n-loathing.com.
You can follow
like
Sam
or we can
Fly.
Hire somebody with just like an incredible movie voice to do that at the end too.
You should. Some girl with a sexy voice.
And
in
like the
world.
Beginning too. In a world ravaged by beer.
That's pretty good.
It's up to two men to drink it all.
And then they fall down.
And then they get really drunk and fucking puke in a hotel room.
Coming this summer.
Coming right now. Oh my god, I'm coming and I can't stop coming.
That'd be a great intro.
I'm just going to record that and we're going to use it as the intro.
I'm
so.
Drinking a KBS upcoming. I came.
I can't stop coming. It's so good and chocolatey.